Thank you very much for the kind invitation, and indeed it's an honor to follow such an eminent researcher in the field of vitamin D. I also have the dubious honor to be preventing you from going out at 11:20, the prime time where you can acquire the best quantity in the level of vitamin D. However, I'm going to make it worth your while to tell you about the great effect that vitamin D has on the human body and the possible preventive role that vitamin D could play in ameliorating the symptoms of many pathophysiologies. So briefly, as you all have heard this morning, the vitamin D is an important vitamin that's made both in plants and in animals. And in animals, we made the D3 version of the molecule. Classically, if you were hearing this talk 20 years ago, most of you would have just heard about the limited role of vitamin D in maintaining in regulating the homeostasis of calcium and phosphorus in the human body. However, what has emerged in the past 20 years at least is that vitamin D plays quite a lot of important immune function, a role in immune function modulation and also in arresting growth and in cellular differentiation pathways. What I'm going to do today is try and explain the cellular and molecular mechanisms by which vitamin D can act at several parts of the human body. Briefly, however, I'm going to address some of the questions that people ask in the morning about how vitamin D is produced. Indeed, the amount in humans is produced on the skin, and yes, if you are darker, you have a lot more melanin. And the problem with melanin is that it can also absorb the same ultraviolet B light as you want. So if you are lighter, the absorption is not diverted to melanin, and actually it is a vitamin D hydrocholesterol that absorbs it. Now, can you go out without dehydrated blood sugar? The answer is no. Because all you need is a carbon precursor acetate, and then you're going to be making these fine molecules anyway in the body, and you will always have a remnant of cholesterol in the system. So, vitamin D, when it is metabolized, and I'm actually going to show the actual biochemistry of metabolism, will be bound by two types of binding proteins in the blood circulation. DBC, which is vitamin D binding protein, and albumin. However, the predominant factor is bound to DBC. It gets circulated to the liver, and the liver we have the first hydroxylation that takes place, which is the 25 hydroxylation of the structure, but that's not sufficient for the vitamin to be so potent in action on the cells. We need to actually have the vitamin transported to the kidney, where the kidney also helps you, or your body, to convert it to the 125 dihydroxy vitamin D3, which is the potent metabolite in the human body. Can you get it from food sources? The answer is yes. It's found in fish, it's found in eggs, meat, it's all found in some plants. And nowadays, indeed, in industrial settings, we always fortify our foods with vitamin D because most of us are going out in the sun and kind of the job that really we're kind of housebound, office bound, and indoors most of the time running outdoors in jungles running naked. So, just to shed a light on that metabolism and why you can never go without an acetate source, any carbon source in your body through all the foods, because all the biomolecules they eat have carbon, they're going to be metabolizing it to 7-dehydroxycholesterol. Now, this has the squalene ring that you'll find in a lot of cholesterol-based metabolites, like the steroid hormones generally. And basically, the ultraviolet light really succeeds at breaking this B ring. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4 rings, and you're breaking this B ring at the carbon 9 and 10. Now you also need your skin temperature. So being in a warm environment, maintaining your 37 degrees Celsius body temperature is also very important. And studies in the cold show that you don't produce enough vitamin D when you're in a very, very cold environment. So you need the sunlight and you need the heat and the warmth to maintain your body temperatures, which you do because of homeostatic control anyways. And that consists in metabolizing the product to this vitamin D3 precursor. However, as I said, the hydroxylation is very important because of the hydroxylation in site 25 and site 1. So you get the 1-alpha-25-dihydroxy metabolite that's going to make the most potent metabolite in your body. Can your hydroxylate this molecule to other cytosine families, yeah. We do know that we can hydroxylate this branch chain quite a lot. We do get products of hydroxylation, like calcitriuric acid. And we do also know that if we hydroxylate at the 24 site, that's the cue to get rid of the metabolite and its action. So action 24 hydroxylation deactivates the molecule. You don't want that if you want the action to work. So basically, while you're all here, hopefully you're going to all have a common interest in the role of vitamin D, because it's no longer just known to classically just affect bone or kidneys or its early intestine. But vitamin D has now been identified in many targets that have a very important pleiotropic effect. Now, in intestines, clearly, if you have vitamin D acting, what it's meant to do is going to improve intestinal calcium absorption through regulating one of the calcium ion channels and transporters that allow calcium to be taken in or absorbed from ingested food. What you also have is that the calcium binding proteins, like calbinding 28, is also upregulated in the intestine. If you look at the role of vitamin D in bone, what it does is it actually helps the action of both osteoblasts and the chondrocytes, and obviously the role of osteoblasts is also to activate osteoclasts to help in the normal bone remodeling and osteoclast function of the cells. Now, more information about these very important molecules that will help you layer down both the calcium and also layer down organic material for collagen and matrix building in the bone. So clearly it seems to have quite a lot of effects, and it also has effects on the rankle of great activation of the osteoclast. So we're going to look at that in a bit. In parathyroid hormone, T cells in parathyroid hormone are also affected by vitamin D. Initially what I should have mentioned is that BTH will help the kidneys in the hydroxylation process. But just as the previous speaker has said, when you have too much vitamin D, and if there's any actions in your quarantine surface, well, vitamin D has now a feedback loop, a negative feedback loop, and it brings down the levels of BTH that are potentially vitamin D. So it kind of regulates itself. What also it does regulate is vitamin D regulates transcription of vitamin D, as I will show in a minute. Now in the kidneys, we also want to be reabsorbing calcium and phosphate back. It's not just in the intestine where we have ingested food. Whatever already is in our body, we don't want to get rid of. We want it to stay in our body. So as well, we're going to, vitamin D affects the kidneys by increasing the reabsorption of calcium, affecting the reabsorption of phosphate through sodium phosphate transporters, both 1 and 2. And it also will help, vitamin D will have an action on the 24 hydroxylase here. So as I said, when the level gets too high, the levels themselves regulate their resistance in your own body via the downregulation of the metabolite in the active form. And we're going to see how that's the point of the expanded mechanistic action. Again, we have an important calcium binding protein in the kidneys, calbinding 9, which is also activated by vitamin D. Now, immune function, indeed, I could add all peripheral bone marrow type of cells here in this list, but I put in immune function, and what vitamin D does to immune function, it seems to suppress gamma interferon and the interleukins 1 to 6. And really, as you've heard before, it kind of down-levels, it suppresses the adaptive immune system and the can the work of the helper cells and their potentiation. If there's anyone interested in the central nervous system, we also find that vitamin D has direct role on glial cell function and the hippocampus, and we see that the both the mRNA level and the protein level, the water proteins, get regulated by vitamin D, like the nerve growth factor, neurotrophin, the leukemia inhibition factor, and there are studies, observational studies, and population studies to show if you give vitamin D, for example, to patients with Alzheimer's, so better than impaired central nervous system function, then they have an improvement in their memory over a period of time in treatment. So it does seem to play a very important role in the central nervous system. If we look at epithelial tissues, and I thank Professor Hollis and the on cancer, because this is going to be something I'm going to focus on. With a lot of epithelial tissues, we see that the role of vitamin D is to control either differentiation or cell growth or fiber progression. And therefore, if you give vitamin D, frequency, the frequency modulates the sound growth and the subtype of the rest. And epithelial space tissues, such as membrane, prostate, colon, we do find that clearly there are gene effects, downregulation of genes involved in cell growth. And we do find that if we put vitamin D on things like hair follicles, if you're interested in skin, studying how hair grows, etc., we find that vitamin D has a very important role in hair follicle cycle and in hair growth. And as well, for keratinocytes in their own right, produce vitamin D. Keratinocytes can actually produce their own vitamin D as well. In terms of endocrine targets, we heard briefly about insulin. Pancreatic beta cells clearly have improved insulin secretion, and that's because of the effect of vitamin D and calcium fluxes. I will explain to you these mechanisms in a minute. In the thyroid gland, we have reduced TSH levels, and even I could put in adipose tissues because now adipose tissues are really quite at the heart and center of metabolic syndrome, endocrine function, etc. Vitamin D does have a role in downstream targets, I'm going to mention, and that will also increase the secretion of things like adiponectin, which improves insulin sensitivity. So pancreatic beta cells and the whole response of the body to insulin is also improved by vitamin D inhibition. Now, in other systems, and I put other systems because there's evidence from other cell lines, some of which are from this origin and so on, we now understand that vitamin D, certainly in vitro studies, and animal models show that there's a huge importance of vitamin D in controlling cell growth, in upregulating apoptosis, which is actually a healthy process in the healthy turnover of cells that are damaged or need repair. It also helps contain differentiated cells for already differentiated cells. Kind of like a protective mechanism. I have these cells and I want to get rid of them so I'm sustaining their function. And last but not least, I'm going to actually show how all the vitamin D is implicated in reducing angiogenesis. Angiogenesis means the growth of new blood cells. And if you have the growth of new blood cells, particularly if you have a situation which is predisposing you to tumorigenesis, having a tumor grow in your body, vitamin D actually reduces angiogenesis, and therefore maybe kind of a healthy therapy, complementary therapy in tumorigenesis, against tumorigenesis. Now, how does it act? Vitamin D has three main ways it acts. One of the main ways it acts in a genomic fashion, i.e. affects the DNA directly and affects gene transcription from the DNA. And remember, the way we make proteins is we act DNA, we then make mRNA from them, transcript, and then we make protein. So vitamin D, along with its receptor, will act as a transcription factor, activator, or receptor of different genes, some of which are the systems I mentioned. How it acts? It acts as a heterodimer with another nuclear receptor, which is also bound by 9-cis retinoic acid, and that second heterodimer is between BDR and RFR, which is the receptor for the retinoid molecules. What is going to happen is vitamin D enters the cell and binds this particular receptor. This heterodimerization creates a coactivator complex, which then results in chromosome remodeling and also activates or binds to other transcription factors that initiate the onset of certain genes and therefore switches on the gene. Okay? So, what does the receptor look like? What is it made of? The receptor belongs to the nuclear receptor family, and that includes the receptors for follow-up steroid resonance and thyroid hormones. These share similarity and some of the DNA binding sites, but the ligand binding sites are very, very weak. The molecule itself has this unique zinc finger. It has special nuclear localization signals. Obviously, special signals to help in the DNA binding, because you're going to exert the effect on the gene. And it has activation sites, which are important in helping in switching on of the gene. Now, several transcripts exist from the gene which is on chromosome 12, on the Q arm of chromosome 12, but the most important, most potent, and most active active in action is the mosque that has the 427 Muslims. This is just a schematic of which regions are quite important. Some regions, as I said, are important in DNA binding. So these regions here, at amino acids 24 to 19, 91 to 115, will allow the receptor to bind to the response element, which is the DNA sequence to which responds to the factor. We need important localization signals, and actually both of these localization signals, and we know this through mutagenesis analysis, both of these localization signals are actually quite important for the receptor to take a nuclear location. And we wanted to take a nuclear location to affect gene transcription. Okay? Hormone binding, this is a very specific region to this receptor. Yes, we can have some similarities between the different nuclear receptors in their ligand binding, but the specific sequences here will give you the specificity in the vitamin D binding to the VDR. Dimerization is required. VDR can actually dimer with RXR, the retinoid receptor, but it actually can dimerize with other nuclear hormone receptors, but not with the same specificity or the same efficacy as with RXR. Last but not least is this region, the AF2 region on helix 12 of the molecule, and the molecule requires this, even though it's a very short part of the sequence, for initiating activation. What are the elements that VDR is able to bind to? The elements have this sequence, which is called the DRT sequence. It basically is a sequence of DNA, okay? And a sequence of DNA that has these six nucleotides, GGTCCA, then three miscellaneous nucleotides, could be any of the four nucleotides you can have in DNA, and then we repeat the sequence again for six bases. And what I've highlighted here in purple are those that seem to be quite conserved in sequence regardless of what promoter you're looking at or the response element you're looking at. Now, DR4 and DR6 sequences exist, i.e. 646 or 666 all this is in certain genes. And there are a few hypotheses that say sometimes DR4 is implicated in the downregulation, either regression or gene transcription. What can happen if the transcription factor will bind to the correct VDR element is we can either activate gene transcription, so we're switching on the gene and increasing the levels of mRNA and obviously eventually increase the levels of protein. We can repress the gene, i.e. downregulate it, and sometimes one or more genes may have one VDR or more than one VDR. And we can also modulate the transcription of certain genes, not through the VDR element directly, but through the interaction of VDR with some of the cis elements of those other genes and or with the binding transcription factors on the VDR gene, which then interacts and co-activates with other genes. So it's kind of an indirect effect. Additionally, we do know, I already mentioned, that RXR needs to heterodimerize the VDR, so the VDR exerts action. So modulation by the levels of vitamin A4S and retinoic, 9th retinoic acid, may also modulate how potent and how active this transcription factor is able to activate transcription. What kind of genes? So let's get to the gene level now. You will find it in the intestine. I've already mentioned that certainly the calcium binding proteins are upregulated via VDRE elements. So basically these are genes that do have VDRE elements, and that the regulation of expression of these genes is directly affected at the genomic level. Okay? We find the calbinin, C28, and the intestine and nucleus, the transport of the phosphate, and the transporters of calcium are directly upregulated as a result of VDRE regulation in the heart, and we have an end, we could talk about cardiomyocytes. What's very interesting is that we have a downregulation of adrenaline peptide, AMP, which modulates kind of vasodilation reactions towards blood pressure changes. In bone, we do have endocalcin, oxytocin, and rankle, all of which would aid in bone mineralization and collagen matrix in the bone, are also upregulated, really showing a key role here in bone metabolism and absorption and formation. The thyroid gland, already mentioned, is a negative feedback loop where vitamin D can break down all levels. the potentiator of the kidney anyway. In the kidneys, we also have genes that aid in the resorption of calcium and phosphine, and we also, at the BDRF, at the gene level, we can downregulate the 24-hydroxylase, which will metabolize the 24-hydroxylase and make the vitamins that are available for action, therefore we're trying to detoxify the body. In terms of cellular adhesion, integrins, which are important to cellular adhesion, are upregulated. It's important to maintain certain differentiated states of certain cells and many other systems. And again, I could divert cells and cancer lines, because you know, you can't mention every single gene in the human body. This is a very, very interesting emerging piece of lots of data that show that we do have genes that promote cell cycle, basically PFOS and CMIC, these are going to aid proliferation. These are down-regulated if you add vitamin D into cultures in vitro. We also see that we also arrest the cell cycle not only by by suppressing the kind of oncogenic or oncogenic kind of molecules, but also the inhibitors of these molecules, and also the inhibitors of cyclins and CDK are upregulated. What also is very important is that apoptosis, which is a normal healthy cell death, programmed cell death, to help our body get rid of cells we don't want. Okay, cells that should not be there, they're not functional, they have DNA damage, they have some leakage in the mitochondria, whatever the reason of damage, we also see that vitamin D raises or aids in apoptotic events by down-regulating BCL2, which is a pro-survival gene. Okay? Now you don't want that gene to be working high in cancer state. Now, as I said, I can't actually mention all genes because when we do chip sequencing and human genome-wide association scans, so this is basically where we take DNA and we take cell lysis and neutralize it, and we see where the transcription factor binds to DNA. And when we do this kind of chip sequencing and then we follow it by in vitro studies, we actually see that so many possible genomic positions can bind the BDR, be bound by BDRE. So they have consensus sequences or sequences similar to the consensus BDRE elements. With in vitro studies, what has been confirmed by some things, a very recent study by Ramagoslan in 2010, they found actually very successfully about 230 genes were significantly changed upon in vitro stimulation with vitamin D3. The reasons that they've identified include multiple regions, some between genes, some chronic regions, some upstream and some downstream, and sometimes even the untranslated bicarbonate and bicarbonate DR. Now, is it important just in the disease? Yeah, there's no from the study, because even vitamin D may normally modulate simple phenotypes, like your hair color or your height, and not just be implicated at sites which are related or associated with disease. So, how is this activation at the gene level occurring, or indeed how is the repression at the gene level occurring? I'm going to try to simplify a really, really busy slide, but a very informative slide. Remember, the vitamin needs to come into the cell and it needs to be bound by the BDR, and then it needs to heterodimerize with the RXR, which is bound by its own ligand, nitrosretinoic acid. And then here, when these co-localize to the nucleus, because remember we have a nuclear localization sequence in the BDR, this will sit on the correct BDRE, the response element in the gene that's supposed to activate. It needs to recruit other helpers, which are called co-activators of gene expression. In this case, we need to recruit NCOA, 62 and SCID, and GBP and P300, and also the SARC family co-activators. And these together will initiate a complex that drops it, PBAS and these Y-SNP complexes, which really their role is to open up the gene and open up the DNA. Ooh, okay. I need a few more. So basically the final aim of it is to open up the chromatin and allow the RNA2 polymerase here access to the gene. With this, we have the recruitment of the drip complex at the initiation at the top of the box, and that's going to switch the gene transcription on positively. Now, if we want to repress what we are going to do is actually have complexes that prevent this remodeling from occurring, and then the final aim is to use your product. But the vitamin does not act just at the genomic level, it also acts in non-genomic actions via what is putated to the cell membrane receptor. And the cell membrane receptor in brief is going to allow you to have quick response to vitamin D. So the genomic effects take a bit of time, take a few hours, okay? They could take, you know, about an hour and above, but they take a few hours to have their action. If you want a quick response, and certainly the quick response you want is so that you modulate the calcium levels inside the cell, you're going to want it to act by this membrane receptor, which activates TLC, which in turn allows for the formation of JAG and IP3, or secondary messengers inside the thymosol. They will allow PKC cells to work. The final aim of IP3 is to increase the calcium secretion from the endoplasmic stores of the cell, increase calcium in the cytosol, create an electrochemical gradient, and also improve then calcium entry into the cell. And we know that calcium has so many effects in cell motility, pulse, secretion, etc. Sorry, I'm not sure because I'm told I only have 7 minutes. But our understanding is not just from looking at genes and in vitro studies. We also look at knockout mice. I'm somebody who's worked with animals extensively, and I think you know that animals, living beings, tell us a bit more than little cells in vitro, although I do like animal mice as well. So there have been two knockout mice models that have been created, both in 1997, obviously, properly phenotyped by these two groups, Shigeki, Kato, and Mari Lemay have their knockout models, and obviously a lot of people have taken their mice and also worked with them to phenotype them. There are very few, there are some very interesting phenotypes that emerge. Clear growth retardation. So this is telling us there's something there, actually, that's saying the vitamin D deficiency, because its receptor has been knocked out, is affecting mitogenic signals in the body. Okay? We also see alopecia, the hair loss, so we understand the role in hair formation. The clear osteomalacia and rickets, which is because we have impairments of calcium absorption. But we also see quite a lot of things like female fertility and uterine hyperplasia. So again, we're preventing growth somehow, okay? And we see decreased survival because these mice live much, much shorter than that has passed the lifespan, which is almost cut in half. And last but not least, we see one very interesting outcome in terms of cancer, in that these kind of organisms tend to have colorectal cancer or cancer of the colon. Other studies, taking now cells from these knockout mice, if you add tumorigenic or carcinogenic substances onto them, then we also see that those that do not have the receptor, i.e. the receptor has been knocked out, they're more susceptible to getting more cancer. Okay? It's not that the normal mouse, when you add the carcinogen, will not get cancer, it will. But those that have the receptor knocked out will have a higher incidence of getting mutations causing to hyperplasia. A lot of skin cells and mammary tissues also go into phases of hyperplasia, and the lymph nodes and the thymus. But the interesting thing is that this is not across the board. So not all tissues are affected substantially. Okay, we can't say they're not affected, but they're not affected substantially with the primary player being vitamin D, and these are the ovary and uterus and lung and liver. And as well, everyone's showing with these mice that the tissues themselves have a lower lifespan, or a shorter lifespan. Now, this is how probably vitamin D is antagonizing mitogenic cues in the body. This again shows that vitamin D may have an interaction with the molecules of downstream signaling of growth factors and the signaling molecules of growth factors. Now remember, other than the hormones that we've spoken about, corticosteroid hormones, vitamin D, they act as hormones, we have peptide hormones, things like DPP-4, insulin, IGF-1, EGF, so quite a lot of protein peptides that cannot enter the cell, okay, and they need to signal via receptors on the cell surface like this, okay? These will initiate a number of myogenic signaling cascades, which are very complex, okay? But I'm going to just briefly talk about them because I'm getting a few receptor tyrosine kinase includes things like VEGF, insulin, IGF-1, as I mentioned, and they can signal via two pathways, either by the phosphorylation of these pathways, RAS-MEK, and finally having phosphorylation of ERK, which are molecules that then go into the nucleus and signal to promote cell growth, or they can signal via PI3 kinase and AKT, which is PKB activation and M4 activation to promote cell growth. Now, if you add vitamin D, what it does is actually knock this out, and what we see is we have promotion of apoptosis and the rest of cell cycle growth. What it can do as well, it's probably blocking these via either the direct action on by VDRE, as we saw, or a direct action on downregulating the pro-mycogenic effects of these on things like the cyclin 1, 2, and 3, and their cyclin-dependent kinase partners. So we are actually we are arresting the cycle at many stages, at the G1 phase, at the G2 phase, and also at the F phase of replication, and we're also preventing transition to M phase. Cells can't divide if you put vitamin D. So what it's doing is potentiating the effect, blocking this. So the cell can never really divide and proliferate as it wants to. A lot of these genes are regulated at the VDRE level, so a lot of these effects are genomic, P21, P27, which arrest the cell, and other kind of genes that arrest the cell as well. If we look at things like TGF-beta, TGF-beta will promote pro-apoptotic and tumor suppressor genes, and what we can see is that also quite a lot of the downstream SMAD signaling and quite a lot of the E2F initiation for transcription gets blocked by vitamin D. So vitamin D potentiates that effect. We also know an effect on TERT genes that are important, to the reverse transcription telomerase, which helps DNA replicate. And we see that many effects will modulate calcium fluxes, will block telomerase, and block the M4 pathway, which are pro-proliferative. Many of these, although indirectly shown, so there are no VDREs in these, but we do know through mRNA analysis that many of these that are promoting DNA replication and those that are promoting apoptosis, we're blocking DNA replication, we're promoting apoptosis, and therefore arresting the cell. We're not killing the cell, we are killing the cell or arresting it, either or depending on the dose. Last but not least is this, for anybody who's involved in colon cancer, what is interesting is that we have a very important set of molecules known as the wingless molecules, or the wing molecules. They have potentiate for proliferating cells, and they work by the action of beta-catenin. Beta-catenin needs to also go to the nucleus to exert its action, and what we see is vitamin D stops beta-catenin localizing to the nucleus, and therefore all the kind of pro-oncogenic genes like c-MYC and CCF1, CF4, etc. are blocked. So what I'm trying to highlight is the vitamin D3 active metabolite definitely affects cell survival by trying to arrest cell growth, promoting cell differentiation, and probably promoting apoptosis. It can also block angiogenesis, and what is very, very unique to cancer and oncologists in the audience is that it does so by affecting the function of HIF-1. So again, even the localization and activity of HIF-1, which is a very important marker of cancer in certain epithelial cells like colon cancer, is also blocked. So this is really, really interesting data to show that perhaps I'm not going to go through the epidemiological studies, perhaps we may have some kind of mechanism where vitamin D analog can be used as a treatment, where there is definitely promising potential. Some of the epidemiological studies are also suggesting that there's a mechanism where adding vitamin D to classical therapies